Reiches chapter 42. So after the previous chapter, which was just Yosef in Mitzrayim entirely from the perspective of Yosef, entirely forgetting his entire family, and even explicitly, right? He gave names to his children, named after him, forgetting the pain that he had in his family's house, in his father's house, and for being successful in Mitzrayim. Now, finally, we have the story returning to Canaan. And this is why I think whoever put the chapters here didn't have such a bad idea. Because this is where the story finally starts to close the circle. As we've been discussing, all the stories of Yosef have these great circles. They start with Yosef being in his parents' house and being in a fight with his brothers and being sold. And then that was all after Yosef dreamt that he's going to be the king over them. And it goes back to that slowly by Yosef becoming the king. Firstly, he became the king in Mitzrayim over the Mitzrayim. And now it's going back to his brothers. So we're starting to also return to his father's house. So if we could describe the Yosef being sold as two distinct parts of one problem. One is that he's sold. He's a slave. And the second one is that he's away from his father's house. So he definitely can't be king over them, but also he's away from them. And in a certain sense, in one aspect of the story, that was fine with Yosef. He seems to have been happy with that. There's a famous question that people ask, why wouldn't Yosef send his father a message or something that is okay? But it seems like Yosef was focused on this aspect, that he was became successful after being sold into slavery. He was less focused on the aspect of his family. But now slowly we get the story returning back to that, and it takes a long time, and there are many different stages of this happening. And all the way until the end, much later, where he meets his father finally again, and even the story of him reconciling with his brothers only after his father dies. So there seems to be many stages in the story, and possibly part of them are Yosef himself coming to terms with returning to his family. But in any case, here we have the first key, the first link that returns Yosef to his family, or returns his family to him, rather, we should say. And the link was discussed already in the end of the last chapter. Since we broadened the story, the first story of Yosef was that there will be a hunger in Egypt, and now the hunger is in all of the lands around and around. I've read somewhere yesterday that there are some situations, some climate situations, which can cause both Egypt and Canaan to have a hunger at the same time or for the same reason. And now Egypt, because of Yosef's preparations that he made there, becomes the provider for all the lands around. And we already had this kind of pattern with Avram, who went down to Mitzrayim in order to survive a hunger that was in Canaan. So similarly, the story with Yosef, but here it's different because then it's just seems like there was a hunger in Mitzrayim, in Canaan itself, in Canaan only. And in Mitzrayim there was food, so Avram went down to Mitzrayim to eat food. Now there's a different situation where there's a hunger all over, but Mitzrayim has this secret trick because of Yosef, and they have food because of that. So all the land, the Chol Ha'aretz, which means maybe here something like all the earth, probably not literally all the earth, but all the surrounding earth, all the surrounding land, comes to Mitzrayim to buy from Yosef. Now it sounds like Yosef, maybe that's why the story says that Yosef changed his name. So the brothers who are coming also now to buy food from Yosef, they don't know his name because he's called Safran Spanach, he's not called Yosef, so it's not like everyone knows that he is Yosef. So now we're back in Canaan, and we're speaking from the perspective of Yaakov. Yaakov sees that there is shever, there is food in Mitzrayim, and so he tells his sons, Lamut Esrui. What does that mean? Rashid seems to interpret it to mean that maybe Yaakov could have survived. He had some ways of, maybe he had money to buy food from other places, but it wouldn't be nice relative to his neighbors to like be the only one that has food. But from the next part, that seems not like such a reasonable pshat, because he says he's heard that there is food in Mitzrayim. Go down to there and get us so we don't die. So it seems like otherwise he would have died. Of course, that literally died, because obviously he has money to buy the food with, which is an important thing to notice, right? If you're living entirely off the land, then you don't really have money left over from last year. If there's a hunger one year or maybe 2 years in a row, you totally die because you don't have any saved up money. Yaakov is a businessman. He has sources of income. He has sources of money, and he could exchange his money for food. So he's going to Mitzrayim because he heard there's food in Mitzrayim. And so Yosef's 10 siblings, Yosef's 10 brothers, go down to Mitzrayim. Besides Rabbi Yemen, and here we discover a new thing, Yaakov has been very worried since Yosef disappeared. He's been worried, very worried as Yosef's little brother. Binyamin didn't send him because he was afraid maybe a asin, something like a tragedy. That's how we translate it. I'm not sure if that's the original meaning of the word, but something will happen to him, like has happened to his brother. Of course, if so, why does he let all the other 10 brothers go? And why is it needed for all the 10 brothers to go? Why can't he just send one? Maybe there's still some favoritism that Yaakov is showing to Binyamin, who is the daughter of his favorite wife, Rachel, and like being more worried that he will die than the others. Or maybe that was accepted. He was the youngest. So for the same reason that he loved Yosef for being the youngest son, now he loves Binyamin for being the youngest. And maybe they had to send all 10 because they had to bring a lot of food. They have a big household. Okay. So we move to watching the brothers, the children of Yisrael, literally, Bnei Yisrael, but here it's literal, right? Later, Bnei Yisrael is a name for the Jewish people, the children of Israel. Now it's literally the children of Israel, going down to Mitzrayim. And Yosef, he is the one who controls the land. He is reigning there. He is giving food to everyone. And so the brothers come to Yosef and they bow down to him. So this is most explicit, or the first move where the brothers come back to Yosef is they bow to them, which is explicitly what he has predicted in his dream, that they will bow down to him. And now we have an important pasuk that switches perspectives. It gives the perspective of Yosef to this. So until now in this chapter, in this story, we have the specter of Yaakov and his brothers who are simply going down to Mitzrayim to get food to provide for their families. And they're bowing to Yosef, which we know as Yosef. They probably don't know him as Yosef, just as the leader, as the pasuk said in a minute ago. But Yosef, hu ha-shalet, Yosef is the leader of this country, and therefore they're bowing down to him. But now we turn to Yosef's perspective for a second, and that is in order to explain what will happen next. So Yosef recognizes his brothers. He knows who they are. And therefore, he pretends not to know them. There's this very clear play of language. Vayakirem, he knows them, he recognizes them. Vayisnaker alehem, he pretends to act like a stranger to them. He estranges himself to them. Something like they estrange themselves to him by selling him to Mitzrayim and not acting like a brother. And he is estranging himself to them and speaks to them harshly. And now we have an entire dialogue between Yosef and his brothers, who don't know who is Yosef, which is all explained by this. He spoke to them harshly. So the beginning of the conversation, the first thing is Yosef says, "Where are you from?" Maybe that was a normal thing to ask, that he asked everyone. This is something like unclear in the story, because like, of course, Yosef is the leader here. Yosef is the main man in Israel. That doesn't mean that he's interviewing everyone that comes to buy food. So there's a question here. And later in the story, it seems to like have a specific instruction from Yosef to his servants, to his people, to bring his brothers to him. But here it's not clear, like, how did the story start? Did he get some message from somewhere that his brothers were coming, and therefore he... and that's why he got to speak to them personally, or was there some kind of normal way of this working? I don't know. But in any case, he has an entire conversation with them, and he says, "Where are you from?" And they say, "We're coming from Canaan to buy food." And here we have again the pasuk. It says, "Vayakir Yosef es echav haim lo yikiru." He recognized them, but they did not recognize him. So this is like a second time it says the same thing. First, we already said that he recognized them, and therefore he started speaking to them harshly. And now maybe it means to say, even though he started to speak to them, maybe they should have recognized him. If they would have known him a little better, they would have recognized him. But still, they do not recognize him. And he remembers the dreams that he dreamt about them. Seems like that means, now it says that he remembered the dreams. He should remember or know that every time it says in Tanakh someone remembered something, it never means something internal. Like he remembered, okay, he thought about it in his heart. What it means is that he remembered, and in other words, it was brought to his consciousness, and therefore he's doing something about it. So obviously, what this means to say is that what comes next is him thinking of how to make his dreams happen. Or in some sense, they already happened, because it already happened that his brothers bowed down to him, but maybe they don't recognize it, or maybe they don't bow down to him enough, or don't recognize his authority enough, so he's trying to make it happen even more. And so we have a second part of a conversation. Like previously, it was just like pleasantries. Okay, who are you? Where are you from? Now, he actually starts off with an accusation. His accusation is, Miraglim Atam, you are spies. You came to see Erves Oretz. Erves Oretz means literally the weak spots of the land, right? That's what the job of a spy is, to find out where's the weak spot, where could we start if we want to conquer the land or something like that. It's not clear to me what's the context of this. Like, is Mitzrayim a country that is threatened all the time by Canaan? Like, maybe there's they're sending spies in order to conquer them, in order to start a war with them. What's this paranoia all about? I'm not sure. But that's what he claims. And they answer him something kind of weird and not clear how it's related to the accusation. They say, no, we're not spies. We came to buy food. We're all children of one man. We're kainim. Kainim means something like honest, serious. We're not menagel. So menaglim are people who pretend to be something they're not. They pretend to come buy food, but really they're here to find out, you know, where the openings of the city are, where's the best to conquer it from. So they say, no, we're honest. We came to buy food, and that's what we're about. And seeming to establish their credentials as normal people, just a family who came to buy food, they provide a lot of information about their family. They give the full family story. There's 12 brothers. We're all children of one man. The smallest is still home. One more is missing. And that's supposed to explain how this is just a family and the fact that there's so many people and maybe so many, what we call now military age men, is just a coincidence since they're all part of one family. Now, what is interesting here is, since we readers obviously know that this Ha'echad Einenu, Yosef, is the one they're speaking to, so we're supposed to imagine what Yosef is thinking now. And this is like him hearing about his family and how everything is going on. But now, if we return to how it looks from the perspective of the people in this story, Yosef at least pretends to be not at all convinced by this response. Maybe he seems to claim that it makes it even worse. Says, Hiyasha debate, this is what I've said, you are spies. It's not clear how he means to say that this is how he said it. Maybe he means to say, your cover story isn't very convincing. You've made it sound even less realistic than it is. And he proposes a test. And he swears in the name of Pari, he says, this is the protest. I swear that this is the only way you'll get out of this. If you bring your smaller brother, then we'll know that you're true. And I think the simplest way to understand this test, since it has to make some kind of sense, is something like this. They're pretending that they're a family, and they give the whole background story, and they even add some details about this brother, you know, to make it sound more real. And Yosef is claiming, listen, you're not brothers. You're just a bunch of random strangers who are got together to create some kind of militia to conquer Mitzrayim. And obviously, you just added this little piece of color about this small brother, you know, to make it sound more like a family. How about you prove that you actually have such a brother? And he's pretending as if probably you don't really, and therefore you won't be able to produce his brother, and therefore you will prove that your whole story is a cover story and is a lie. And that's what he says. If not, I swear to Pater that you are spies. In other words, I'm sure that you're spies. This story isn't convincing anyone. And he puts them in a mishmar, in a prison, in under watch for 3 days. And this is probably meant to remind us of Yosef being Bamishmar, Baisar Tabuchim, same word, the same kind of thing. Maybe he thinks that, you know, you put me in jail, I'll put you in jail. And then on the third day, he comes to them and he tells them like this, a new thing. A minute ago, he swore in the name of Pari. Now he mentions God. He says, listen what we'll do and live. In other words, until now, maybe it seems like he didn't accept their excuses at all, and he was planning to just keep them in jail or kill them. And now he says, look, I'm afraid of God. In other words, I don't want to kill an innocent person just based on my suspicions. We'll do this. Instead of having you all bamishmar, which is, we probably understand that in Egypt, it's not like there's a punishment to go in jail. The prison is just a place to keep people until they decide what to do with them, to kill them or not. Like we saw in the story of Yosef, like we saw in the story of the Sarah Mashkev and the Sarah Oifim. So he's saying, look, I have a new proposal. Let's try to be more honest. Let's try to be more fair. You know, you claim to be just people. Let's try. We'll actually do the test. I will just leave one of you here, like as a hostage. You go home, bring food for your families, who I claim doesn't exist, but let's see. And then you bring back your small brother, your little brother, and then we will prove your words if you're correct, and then I won't die. And that's what they do. And now, very interestingly, we have, again, a shift in perspective to the brothers between each other, and they're speaking to each other, and they say, after this, and it's interesting, why is it at this stage? It should have been in a previous stage, but the point, it has to happen here because we need it to be in front of Yosef, this dialogue, so we could have the next part where Yosef really hears and has to pretend that he didn't hear that, which is like a very important part of this whole story, where there's these people that are brothers, but they don't really, only one side recognizes that they're brothers, and there's a lot of like emotional dynamics going on here. So they say to each other, one to each other, look, it's our fault because of our brother that we didn't help, that we saw him crying to us and we didn't answer him. We didn't, in other words, we didn't save him. That's why this sort of this hardship is coming to us. And this is actually an interesting piece of information because we didn't have in the previous story when they stole them, we didn't have any stories about Yosef begging to them or anything like that. But obviously he did that. We can imagine that that happened. But here we see that this is the way they describe like the evil that they did. Where like Yosef, their little brother, was crying to them, don't kill me, don't sell me. And they just didn't do anything. And Riven is the one that says, look, I told you so. Didn't I tell you? Don't sin with the child. And you didn't listen to me. And now his blood is being demanded. Domei Nidrash is being demanded or were being accused of him. And probably they assumed that he was killed somehow or was lost or something. And the Pusik tells us, like clarifies to us this like weird situation where two people are in one room but they're sort of behind the curtain, they don't understand each other, that they don't know that Yosef is listening because there was an interpreter between them. So Yosef of course pretends not to speak whichever language they were speaking, maybe Ivris, which is the language of Ivrim, and Yosef is speaking to them in Egyptian and they have an interpreter because they both don't understand each other. And he turns around from them and cries. This is something Yosef keeps on doing in this part of the story. He gets emotionally, cries, but not in front of them, so they shouldn't notice. And he returns back to them, sort of, you know, like I said, and later washes his face and speaks to them. In other words, speaks to them back. He's put back on his mask of being harsh to them, takes Shimon, you know, locks him up in front of them. And we're back to Yosef playing this scary role with his brothers. And now we have another interesting part, which I'm not entirely sure what is it for, this whole story, which is that Yosef commands his people, you know, to fill up their vessels, their whatever they brought, to bring back the food with food, their bags, and give them food for provisions for the way. And now he also probably commanded this. It does say, and to return their money into their bags. So Yosef is already somehow setting up some kind of situation where he'd be able to accuse them of stealing the money or something. It's not clear what this is, but what it is clear that later they take everything on their donkeys and they leave. And as they go, when they arrive at some place where they were sleeping on the way, they open their bags to give food to the donkeys and they see their silver or their money in their bags and the openings of their bags, and they all get very scared. And they tell each other, look, I've got my money back. Their heart goes out, literally, and they shudder, they're scared, and they said, what did God do to us? In other words, they seem that something is wrong here, and looks like this is maybe they think this is part of the this king, this Mitzri person trying to find a way to, you know, find some libel on us, just like he found this idea that we're spies, is going to claim that we're stealing his money also. And they're very scared. But it doesn't say what happens. Obviously, they're on the way back to Canaan, so it's not like there's something going to happen now. And there we turn their story turns back to Canaan and back to the perspective of Yaakov, who is not really part of any of this, and he has to be told. They come back to Yaakov, they tell them the whole story, and it repeats the whole story as they told it to Yaakov. And they're, in other words, they're barely asking Yaakov to send along Binyam with them for next time. They tell him, this is the man accused us of being spies. We told him we're not. And he told us we have to bring our brother to prove it. And then he will return their brother to them and allow them to buy things. And as they're opening their bags, they see the money and they're both scared. So this is like described. It's very nice. Just like this before in the mullen, in the inn or wherever they slept on the way. We have like description of them opening their bags and seeing the money and getting scared. The same exact thing happens in front of their father. They don't just tell him, you know, and there was also this thing with our money being somehow mysteriously back in our bags, and this is probably some kind of libel being set up. But we literally describe them sitting in front of their father and like opening their bags, and they're all shuddering. Now, but Yaakov is not impressed by all of this. Yaakov seems to be like we had in the end of the first part chapter of the Yosef story, where he's very brokenhearted. He's mourning his son all of his days, and he seems to have not recovered from this yet. I mean, he didn't recover from this yet. And he therefore also is very worried and not very excited to send Binyamin, even at the cost of, that's the cost of getting back Shimon, and that's the cost of getting more food. And Yaakov tells the children, his children, look, you've caused me to lose my child. Shikaltim, which is a special word for a father that loses his child or a mother. I don't have Yosef. I don't have Shimon. You're going to take Binyamin also. He doesn't really trust that he's going to get back Shimon, right? He's saying like, look, I have two children missing. You want me to lose a third child? And it even tries to propose something. It even says, you know something, you will kill my two children if I don't bring him back. This is really an exaggerated way. Obviously, probably doesn't really mean that Yaakov should kill his two children, but he's saying, I take responsibility. I will, in some sense, as if I will allow you to kill my two children as a hostage, and so to speak, that I take responsibility. But Yaakov probably remembers the last time that he even take responsibility for something. Obviously, Reuven was the oldest, and he must have been responsible for the brothers when they went to Shechem, and that didn't work out very well. So he says, no, my child will not go down with you. His brother died. He's the one, only one left. Something will happen on the way. And v'radtem esevus tibigin shel, my old age will go down in sadness to Sheol. And he already said this about Yosef, but then it will be doubly happened. And that's where we sort of get stuck. We stop in this story, or this chapter ends here.